Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Apropos of Something. We air on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This show is hosted by me, Ellen Daniels, in our Charlottesville studio, and Nancy Lawrence from our studio in New York City. We are live every Saturday morning from 10 to 11. We seek out the most interesting people we can find with a passion for social justice, political activism, and the arts, and we guarantee every show will be apropos of something. Today, we are speaking with Gloria Beard and Colleen Yates. They both made the 98-person pilgrimage to Montgomery, Alabama this summer to the new Equal Justice Initiative's Legacy Museum and the National Memorial for Peace and Justice. The journey also included several historic civil rights movement sites. We'll hear of the staggering significance of those places in telling the stark and inconvenient truth about just what black people endured at the hands of white people in this country. And we'll hear their own stories of living through Jim Crow in Charlottesville. My friend Nancy Lawrence, are you there to share this show with me?
I am, Ellen. I'm thinking about what we're all enduring in the present, frankly, as well, until the midterms. But yes, I am totally here.
Yes,
I'm here.
I know. One bit of interesting news was that there was foul play, not just in the 2016 election, as we've been hearing about for a while now, but they just indicted someone for meddling in the election this year's election, this year.
Ah, will we be told it's a 400-pound person in their bed? Is that
probably.
Are we getting that today?
Probably. I'm sure there's many disinformation campaigns going on right now. And all that stuff has been coming out, too, about the millions, not just, you know, a few or even like thousands, but like the millions of disinformation social media campaigns that have been going on. Twitter, I think, released a lot of that stuff. They've been kind of like it was seeping out from Twitter, you know, their admission of this.
Yeah.
And then I think they just released a trove of that stuff.
Right, I know. I know it is very interesting that it's just everyone is so let's hurt them in these, you know, regulated calendar days, so maybe they don't forget. I mean, it's such trauma all around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting with the administration's latest thing with the journalist Khashoggi. I was just imagining if this president had been the president, you know, September 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th, or whatever, you know, 2001, could you not just hear him saying, well, you know, Bin Laden tells me he didn't do it. He's telling me very strongly, and
yeah.
I have to accept his word. I mean, there's just...
That is a good point.
there's nothing that guy believes, no matter what his intelligence, you know,
he will always
side with the worst of the lot.
So the event I have to say is to vote, please, everybody. Bring someone with you who didn't vote last time. If you suspect foul play, there's a voter protection hotline, which I tested it out. It does work. That's 866-OUR-VOTE. 866-OUR-VOTE for problems in any state that you see. And then I wanted to give a shout out to the very effervescent and wise John Dirth, who was here on the show last week, who plays jazz at Miller's on the downtown mall every Thursday night starting at 10:30 p.m. And it's free. And the kitchen is open until 2 a.m. That is my kind of kitchen.
which is really why we're mentioning Mr. Dirth in the first place.
Yes.
The kitchen near me that shuts down at 2 a.m. Exactly.
So with no further ado, I wanted to introduce and get right to our first guest. Her name is Gloria Beard. She is one of the 98 community members who made the pilgrimage by bus from Charlottesville, Virginia to Montgomery, Alabama this summer to the Equal Justice Initiative's Legacy Museum and National Memorial for Peace and Justice. And some say that the museum and the memorial are finally a way for truth-telling about the horrific details of slavery and segregation, and then just showing how white supremacy allows racial terrorism to flourish as a social custom. And we'll get into that, all about what they witnessed. So welcome to the show, Gloria.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good, good. So tell us how you first heard about the trip and then how you came to be a part of it.
Well, I first heard from Andrea at the African American Center. She sent out a message and wanted to know who would like to go. That's how I found out. And mm-hmm. I you know, contacted her and told her I was interested.
Cool.
And so what, so we know a little about your background, Gloria, what, where did you grow up? What was life like for you?
Well, I actually grew up in Stanton, Virginia, and it was okay. I mean, you know, segregation was there, but we just accepted it. But I lived in a mixed neighborhood, so the white people, it, we all got along. We just didn't mingle much because we went to an all-black school, and we had our own friends, but I was also had some white friends in my neighborhood.
Does it feel, how does it, the times feel different or similar to then now? I mean, in terms of just the atmosphere to you?
Well, when I was a child, it wasn't so bad. But after I came to Charlottesville, that's when I encountered racism.
Really?
And it just, it's so sad to me that people in 2018 are still, they have their biases. And, you know, I thought we were moving ahead until last year, on August 11th and 12th. So it's, it makes me feel sad.
Did you move, when did you move here from Stanton?
I moved here July 1975.
And you, so you, that's when you experienced racism, when you moved?
Well, not when I first moved here.
Okay.
I worked at a nursing facility then, so it wasn't so bad. But I've experimented it more so when I went to UVA to work.
And before you went on this trip to see some, anyway, of these civil rights landmarks and these two important museums, had you traveled to any civil rights landmarks on your own before, through school or just in your own life? Had you seen any of these things?
No, but I did go with our church, First Baptist Church, on Main Street. We went to Maryland. They have a black museum there. And that was the first black museum I ever, you know, visited in my life. But also we had, you know, black history a little bit when I was in school before we integrated.
I was curious about that, actually. What black history, you know, I know you're not a student now, but what were you, what do you remember learning back then?
Well, we was taught about Booker T. Washington and, you know, Harriet Tubman and a few people, but not none of the serious stuff. They, we weren't taught about a whole lot because we didn't have, you know, textbooks that taught a lot in those days.
When did you become aware of what was happening, the accurate history?
Well, the accurate history, I guess when my, I had my children and I start, and I like to read, so I would get books to teach them because I noticed in that school, in the schools they attended here in Charlottesville, they weren't teaching anything about black history except that one month in February when they talked about Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and Harriet, and those are the only three people that my kids ever was taught about. And I'm like, it's more people than that. There's Booker T. Washington, there's Sojourner Truth, and it was, so I started reading and bought, you know, a library of history books so they could, you know the truth about our race. Because we always, there's a little joke, it says that most black people think that all we do is get our money in and spend it, but we never did anything. And then I found out that a lot of black people invented a whole lot of things. And
while you were growing up, you know, were, I know there weren't computers, so were you aware of protests? How were you made aware of, or were you, you know, what was going on in, during at least the civil rights movement, the 60s, et cetera?
Well, we didn't actually protest in Stanton. I remember I was hearing about the Klan would march sometime, but myself, I didn't go march, and I don't think none of my friends ever marched about, you know, for equal justice.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us about the trip and how that impacted you? So I know you went to quite a few landmarks and civil rights movement sites. Tell us a little bit how, about that trip, where, you know, you could take us through it or just tell us what stood out to you.
Well, when we went to the museum where one of the old Woodworth counters where, you know, they did, the guys had sat there, you know, protesting you know, injustice.
It was a sit-in, I believe.
Yeah, it was a sit-in. Yes,
we
it was.
Talked about it. I remember that. Okay, cool.
And you know, we actually had to put our hands on the counter and earphones, and you could hear the white people in the back saying, "Get up, nigger," and this stuff like that. And I remember hearing this now when I was young, but. Because we didn't integrate Owlsworth either in Stanton until like 1965, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it made me angry. It really did. I was angry because I'm like, oh my goodness, this is what they actually did to these people. Now, reading and hearing that live was different because I really felt it. And it just made me angry that the big, because in the books it said they poured hot coffee on those students, they spit on them, they knocked them out the chair, and I'm like, oh my goodness. And when I heard those words being said, you know, in the earphones, and I'm like, I want to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to rebel. It's like, look, get away from me.
Right. So what happened, I guess, was it was a whites only counter, and some black teenagers or young youth or young people decided to sit down there, and then for that is when all this started, the coffee and
yes,
the harassment. Yeah.
And was one of the stops was actually that the Woolworth building where that original lunch counter was, right? There's a museum there as well. That
yes,
you
it
saw
is.
That?
Oh, yes.
Right.
That's where we were. It was North Carolina. One of the, and it's also in Georgia. They have a counter as well in Atlanta. So,
right.
Yes, and it was amazing.
Were you seeing that stuff on TV? Did you have a TV?
Well,
were you seeing this stuff around you happening, or did this all catch up with you more as a young adult?
Yeah, I guess more so a young adult because we didn't have a TV when I was coming up. My mother made sure I had plenty of books to read.
And so that museum with that exhibit of sitting at the lunch counter, I know also that you walked across the Pettus Bridge. Why was that important to you?
Oh, my goodness, because I knew that when Martin Luther King had taken, you know, that pilgrimage there, you know, fighting injustice. And I at that time, I was on a walker. And when I found out, they had told the ones that was handicapped more or less could just get back on the bus. But when the bus left, because he couldn't really stay in the, you know, in the road because cars were behind him, I was just amazed. I didn't even feel nothing wrong with my legs. It was just exciting. It's like I was living that moment. And in my mind, in my eyes, you know, my memory of reading and seeing pictures on television, movies, I actually felt what they may have felt just to walk across that bridge. And then I could see at the end in Montgomery, you know, we got to the end of the road. There were these racist policemen with the dogs and the guns. I could actually see that in my mind.
Right. So what happened, wasn't it a peaceful march? They were trying to march across the bridge. And once again, they were just attacked.
Yeah, and back in
65.
65, yes. Mm-hmm. But with us, it's just experience of actually taking that route.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, that day, at least, the day you went in July, I don't know, were you, you know, could you guys walk this bridge in peace? Are there white people out there now feeling so emboldened by this president? Were you left to do what you wanted to do that day?
Oh, yes. A matter of fact, we talked to a few people, white people, on the bridge.
Yeah.
And it was no fear. I mean, I didn't have any fear. It was just anticipation, wondering what could happen because the other bus had left us because we got lost more or less. But and it's like, oh, my goodness. And we had, if you don't mind telling you, we had stopped at like three bathrooms. The first two, one of them had a sign saying out of order. I think they knew we were coming. They had the second one, they said something was wrong with the water. Then finally, the third one, they let us use it. It was like, felt really weird with that. At least, like, oh my goodness.
That's odd. Well, tell us about the museum and the memorial.
Oh, you're talking about the Justice Museum
mm-hmm.
with Brian? Oh, it was awesome, but it was sad. It was so many containers with soil from different cities and different times of people that were lynched. Now, that was. it was really a sad moment just to know those many people had been lynched. I knew about lynching, but not those many that he had there at the Justice Center. I would never have guessed. And that's the ones that we know of.
So the statistic I have was between 1877 and 1950, 4,400 people were lynched, and also other horrendous things like burned alive, shot, drowned, or beaten by white mobs.
Yes, dude, I didn't even know that number. Mm-hmm. That's awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know that. Thank you. You informed me about some. You say 44 million?
4,400.
4,400 people.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. I only just got around to building this in 2018, because you mentioned Ellen, it ended, or supposedly,
right,
ended in 1950. So, Gloria, I don't know if there's a door or how you get in, but what was it like walking into that museum for you?
You talked about the Justice Museum?
Yeah, the Legacy Museum.
The Legacy, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I was excited just to, see all the stuff I had heard about that we were going to be able to see there. I didn't know much, but it was exciting, but it was bittersweet. It actually was when we got there.
Yeah, I heard it. Well, I've only read, that's why I was wondering, that some of the exhibits, maybe it's most of the exhibits, but they really confront, and that's why I wanted your opinion, do you feel they really confronted racism and slavery? Or did it help it, did you get a sense of what the history is in our own country while you were there?
Yes, I did. They showed so many people, and, on the walls it had, little paragraphs about why these black people were killed and everything. And it was horrible. So it was like, people had to have been living in fear really bad in those days, because you could be lynched or shot or burned or whatever for no reason, just because.
Right. I mean, what stands out to me is all of that, how really horrible, and I really would like to go to this museum. Nancy, maybe we'll go together. How horrific it really was, and how little, at least white people, know about what really, really happened.
Well, I was glad white people went with us, because, people write our history, but they don't really know our history. And this showed the real history. And these people, the white people, they went with us. They was really shocked, and a lot of them cried, mm-hmm. And we have a lot of allies since that pilgrimage as well. And since last year, too, August 11th and 12th, we have a lot of white allies now that, really understand what we went through. And still some people telling us we need to get over it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, we'll be right back. We'll talk more about that. We're speaking with Gloria Beard in a moment, or in a few minutes. We'll hear from Colleen Yates. They were both part of the pilgrimage to Montgomery, Alabama. And we'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Apropos of Something. We air every Saturday morning, and this morning we're speaking with Gloria Beard, and we'll be talking with Colleen Yates. We're talking about their pilgrimage to Montgomery, Alabama. So I know also, Gloria, that you learned a lot, as we are learning now through you. What is Bloody Monday?
Well, Bloody Monday, it happened in Danville, Virginia in 1963. Matter of fact, it happened on June the 10th, 1963. It's when the black young people had decided that they were tired of being, treated so bad, poorly. So they did a peaceful march. But then they had arrested these people. So then the clergy and citizens of the city, they decided to have a peaceful march at the courthouse. But when they got there, this town had deputized the city workers, and police officers and state troopers were there, and they took these powerful hose and sprayed this water on all of these people to the point where they tore the clothes off, and it was so much blood in the street it looked like a stream. And they had arrested like 45 people or more. I mean, they arrested about 60 people, but then they had injured severely about 45 people. So, and it was really bad. And they did this because they refused to have integration or anything, even though the Supreme Court had ruled it was an unjust to do this, have this integration. So people in Danville didn't want it. It was so bad there that they didn't even want the people to walk on the sidewalks, and they couldn't attend any of the businesses that they had there. Mm-hmm. And it was a sad day there. So it took them 44 years, though, to build a monument. Now they have one in the town, and we actually passed it on the bus. And some people got out and took pictures in front of it, mm-hmm. as it tells the story. And that Bloody Monday on June the 10th, 1963. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was the saddest thing in a city that's so close to Charlottesville.
Yes.
Actually, it was going through all of this.
I was wondering, actually, more at the museum, but this is certainly just as important. I was wondering if how much how many events you learned about that you did not even know anything about. Was this one of them, or had you?
Yeah, I had never heard about that. And then there was also one in Greensboro, North Carolina, when the Klan killed five activists in 1979. They just got out the car and went to the trunk, took out the guns, and shot these people, and not one person was indicted. And this was 1979. I had never even heard about that.
Yeah. The mass, they call it the Greensboro Five, I think.
Yes.
Now, we kind of touched on that on one show, and we did like a whole show about that, or half a show about that one incident.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, so I mean, it was horrible.
Yes. Gloria, one question before this one. I know that there were 98 people on the bus. I just wondered who, in general, what was the range of ages and color? You know, who showed up, you know, from Charlottesville, who went on the trip with you?
Well, we had the high school children from CHS. Mm-hmm. We had the seniors. We had clergy people, you know, clergy. We had teachers. And we had professors from UVA. Mm-hmm. We had a lot. It was a variety of people, and white and black.
Cool.
Speaking of clergy, I know that the clergy and there were therapists as well.
Yes,
yes,
I forgot about the therapist.
Yeah, well, makes me realize, I think part of why they were there was to also help with the emotional trauma of going through this.
Yes, because some people actually talk to the therapist.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. So...
Because that's... Our high school children, I heard them make comments that they had never even... knew about these things, because see, they don't teach the history, and when the teachers have promised to instill the history back into the schools to teach the children, the white and black, because this is the truth and they need to know the truth. I mean, it's horrible, because these people were, even the people from, we had people from City Hall, you know, our council people, our mayor went with us as well, and vice mayor, well, he was not the vice mayor now, but the people are the, you know, the city council and the mayor, they also went with us. Mm-hmm. And some of them from Albemarle County came, because they invested money for this trip. So they flew down when we got to the Justice Center. And one of the council people really broke down. And it was really rough, because they had no clue themselves the truth.
Interesting. So the people that went to help also were just so burdened by...
Oh, they were, yeah. They mm-hmm. didn't know either, but they were there to help us if we needed, you know, somebody to explain. It's just let our feelings out.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in addition to the places you stopped along the way, the main reason that the pilgrimage was made was to bring. Some of the soil from John Henry James, the man that was lynched near enough to Charlottesville, that you guys brought some of that soil down to the Legacy Museum. So how did that look when you finally got to the museum and brought the soil from his.
Well, when it was time for us to transfer the soil into the container that they furnished, you know, they was going to end up putting that on the shelf with the other containers of soil from other places and times. We all took turns, from the young people to the older people, to take a scoop and put it in this jar. And it was an awesome thing, too. It's a whole lot of footage out there, you know. We had people filming this stuff as well, and some has been shown, but there's a whole lot more out there. And so it was awesome to just the experience of doing that. It was sad as well, because this was a man that was hung in 1789, and this was in Farmington. There, it's up the road.
July 12, 1898.
Yes.
Right. 120 years. So this jar, it's on a shelf. What is that? What is that wall? Is it? It's a wall, or what is that? Where you put it?
No, it's they have a shelf.
Okay.
Full of different jars of soil from different places, different times, you know, dates all the way up back as far as 1920, of all the black people that was lynched. And this John Henry James's container was added to the you know, the shelf with all of these other containers.
Gotcha. And when you got back from the trip, did you tell your, well, I'm sure, what was the reaction from your kids when you...
Oh, my children was interested. I talked to them about it, and I asked them to please get more involved in civil rights, and, you know, and because it's important, you know, for their children and my great-grandchildren as well. And so they say they will, but they work right now. It's like I did. Work so much, I lost... That's why I probably didn't hear about a lot of this stuff. I worked so much in my life. But anyway, they were interested, and people I've talked to, just friends, telling them about this pilgrimage. And everybody's interested, and they would like to take the journey. I'd like to go back, because we always had a schedule, and I would love to go back and just take my time, spend about 3 weeks or more, a month, and just stop at each place we went. And because I'm the type of person who like to read and everything, so I might have missed some stuff because I was there reading. Everybody else was moving. Some of the people, but I do, and it's very interesting. And if you can take that trip, y'all need to do it. It's you'll learn a lot of the real history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to do that.
And you're also, because of, well, I know you're sort of involved in Charlottesville as a result of the riots and from, you know, 2017. Is that because of the racism that was so rampant? Are you still, is that still part of your free time in, you know, engaging in the community that way to get people?
Yes, it is. I stay involved because I have time now because I'm retired. And I think it's important to stay involved in your community. And I'm also part of the Citizen Review Board, trying to bring connection between the citizens of Charlottesville and the police force. And I think this is important for people to get involved, because so many people complain, but nobody want to step up and do anything. But that's very important. It makes a difference, and numbers definitely make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And so something that reminds me of, first, I'd love to know how to get involved if people want to do that with the Citizen Review Board. Do you know how to do that?
Well, we already picked, it was eight of us, we are chosen to write the bylaws. Uh-huh. Then after our term is up, then they're going to pick another board to actually carry out all the things, you know, to bring people together, police force and the community. So all you have to do is just go downtown and talk to the city council and see what you need to do, because they're going to be picking more people after our term is up. And I think our term is up in June.
Yes. And as Lisa Wolfark has said, really important things happen at very boring meetings.
I'm learning a lot, and I'm learning how to make a difference.
Well, thank you for doing that. Thank you so much. And
yeah,
thanks.
Your work in the election, the voting.
Oh, yes.
Well, right?
Eight years. This is my eighth year.
Fantastic.
What
do you want to say to people about voting?
I want everybody to come out. It's very important. It's no such thing as my vote don't make a difference. I've been talking to people who have said that to me. It does make a difference. We have to change the narrative about this our town and the United States in general. We have to do and make this a fair place for everybody.
Yes, so amen.
It makes a difference. Oh,
thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Exactly. It was great to hear that your story on that trip. It was really
well.
Was
thank
great.
You all
thank
for
you.
Inviting me.
Yeah. Will you stick around? Will you stick around?
Yes.
Okay.
I will.
Great. Okay. Nancy, you have a news of note for us.
I do, and I'm purposefully choosing one that has to do with voting. Of course, the examples I have are only aggravating, but I just wanted to highlight some of the awfulness going around, you know, part of our state's activities. North Carolina is at the moment, they will be having 20% fewer voting locations in 2018. Nearly half of the state's 100 counties are closing their polling places because of a new law by the GOP that requires all early voting sites to be open 12 hours a day every weekday, and a lot of counties can't do that, so they have to restrict the number of polling places they have, and they don't have the manpower to do it, so people have to travel farther and wait in longer lines, and you can already guess which districts that hurts the most. It is the ones with predominantly black voters. And they also got rid of the souls to the polls, at least North Carolina did. Other states are trying to for this midterm. Kansas, there's only one polling place for 27,000 people in Dodge City, which is 60% Hispanic. And the one place is being moved outside of town. It's a mile from the bus stop. And in Georgia, the famous Georgia with Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, who is, of course, verifying his own elections, the things you've heard about this week. There's also the new one there's the grander one that in the time he's been in office, he's purged 1.5 million mm-hmm. inactive voters, that you have to have that exact match.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another part of, you know, purging so many people. And then there was that news on Monday that the seniors, a lot of black seniors, got on a bus to go vote, and they found out about it, not him specifically, but the Jefferson County hoo-ha, you know, the
yes,
election board. And they stopped. They made them get off the bus, and claiming that the bus wasn't properly licensed.
Yeah, I saw Stacey. Is it Stacey Abrams who I mentioned? Actually
yeah.
tried to interfere with that. It was a just such a horrible scene just to see it visually, you know, just to see the crowd of those people, you know, all about,
right.
you know, maybe 50 years old African-Americans trying to vote. I mean,
yeah,
trying
so
to stop.
Excited. 40 yeah. people, I think. And that was too much of a threat, you know.
So any more?
OK,
so my news of note is from this website. You're going to love it, called Sunny Skies. A Russian hacker. And I know you think you know where this story is going, but a Russian hacker is breaking into people's routers and patching them so they can't be abused by other hackers. So this guy is claiming that he's an Internet vigilante who goes by Alexei, and he claims to have disinfected over 100,000 routers already. And he makes patches. The rest is very technical and all that, but I thought that was an interesting twist.
Yeah. Is it legit, you think? I mean,
I don't know.
He's really doing that versus, like, doing the opposite.
Yeah, we can't know. We can't know. Okay. But also, I will say that his good intentions, it's illegal to do that, to access someone else's equipment without consent.
Sure.
So, but, you know, vigilante as it is. So,
yeah. Interesting.
I wanted
to
introduce our next guest.
Yes.
She is Colleen Yates. She also made the pilgrimage to Montgomery, Alabama this summer to the Equal Justice Initiative's Legacy Museum and National Memorial for Peace and Justice. And she also has a little bit of a different, she has her own experience, but she did a few different things that we're going to hear about. And we are very excited to welcome Colleen to the show. Welcome.
Oh,
okay.
There you are.
Say that again.
Good morning. Thank you.
All right. There we go.
Now it's official.
She's in the house. In the studio. So before the trip began, even, you participated in the ceremony that we were talking about earlier that Nancy brought up, collecting soil, where in 1898, John Henry James was lynched very close to where we stand here in Albemarle County in Virginia. And then you took that soil to the Legacy Museum to help memorialize him. Can you talk about what happened there and your experience? And what was it like for you?
Well, that was a Saturday morning. The pilgrimage started on Sunday. We left early Sunday morning. So on Saturday morning, a group gathered, and it's out 250 West, and it's just outside of the Farmington entrance there. And we gathered to pick up the soil from the ground there where he was lynched. We had a historian, Jane Smith, who gathered all this information and figured it out, because there was very little information out there about John Henry James and about the lynching, and it was something that she had been studying. And when we pinpointed the exact location, a group of us went out that Saturday morning, and we had prayers. We had the clergy speak, the mayor spoke, Nakia Walker, and then we collected the soil, and there were many prayers given. And we departed from there. The soil was taken back to the Jefferson African American Heritage Center, and that soil was actually the meaning of the whole trip, to take it to the lynching museum in Montgomery, Alabama. So that was the reason for the whole trip.
I read that it was the classic horrific tale of a white woman accusing Mr. James, and it went from her saying it was an assault to within hours the attorney just upped it to it being a rape. It caught wildfire, and do you know how they wound up capturing him, that white mob?
Well, what happened was apparently Mr. John Henry James was moved out of Charlottesville, and he was taken to Stanton, I believe it was. And it was on the train ride back, bringing him to Charlottesville to stand trial. And on the train ride back to Charlottesville, I believe in those days, it was equivalent to what was about 4 miles outside the city of Charlottesville, that a mob stopped the train. And apparently one of the white gentlemen dressed as a woman and stood on the tracks. So, of course, the conductor stopped the train. And when the conductor stopped the train, this white mob grabbed Mr. John Henry James off of the train, and they proceeded to torture him and lynch him. And from all historical records, and I believe there's even information in the Daily Progress, that there were just hundreds of people. They were not masked, or they were not wearing any hoods like the Ku Klux Klan. If there were some of the Klan there, they probably had their hoods on. But no one was identified. No one was accused of this crime. And apparently Mr. James' body hung there for quite a while before he was taken down. But a lot of people in this mob apparently were quote-unquote citizens from Charlottesville, but no one knew who anyone was. No one could identify anyone.
We're going to come to a hard break right now, and then we'll be right back to hear much more from Colleen Yates. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Apropos of Something. We air every Saturday morning. This is Ellen Daniels speaking. And Nancy Lawrence, my co-host, will be right back. Welcome back, everyone. This is Apropos of Something. We air on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We've been talking with Colleen Yates. And Colleen, tell us, you went to a lot of interesting stops. Tell us about your trip and all the different places you went to.
Oh, okay. I will give you sort of a brief rundown so everyone out there will know where we went. First, we started with the Appomattox Courthouse and National Historical Park in Appomattox, Virginia. Then we moved on to the Museum of Fine Arts and History in Danville, Virginia. And in Greensboro, North Carolina, we visit the Beloved Community Center and Faith Community Church. And one of the best places that I really liked in Greensboro, the International Civil Rights Center and Museum. We also were in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Levine Museum of the New South Tour. In Atlanta, we went to the King Center and the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. We visited Martin Luther King's boyhood home. the King Center has been just turned into, I believe it was about 3 or 4 months before we arrived. It is now a historical park, his birthplace, and so that got that designation. And also, where King was born and lived as a young boy is now called the Sweet Auburn Historic District. We went on to Birmingham, where we went to the 16th Street Baptist Church, and that's where the four little girls were bombed that Sunday morning. We moved to Selma, Alabama, and that's when we walked across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And, of course, our final destination was the Montgomery, Alabama, to visit the Equal Justice Initiative, the Legacy Museum, and National Memorial to Peace and Justice. So that was our trail there going south.
Thank you.
And, Colleen, when you were growing up, what did you learn in school versus on your own studying?
I'm old enough that I caught the tail end of segregation. So grades 1 through 6, I was in a all-black school. And when I went to the 7th grade was when schools had been integrated. So the 7th grade was my first year of being in a school with whites. And in an all-black school, there was more black history because that is our history, and we study it a lot more than, sadly to say, today there isn't a lot of education as far as the black community or African-American history, you know, is concerned. And that is a troubling point with a lot of African-Americans.
So on this trip in particular, the sites you mentioned, were any of them... Not that you've seen them before, but were any of them even new to you? Did you know? What didn't you know on this trip?
Well, I think when it comes down to it, black and white, different people have made comments. We've listened to different people have their take on how they feel. I think everyone on the trip learned something. I think there were things that we didn't know that we found out about. I think there were things that we knew but hadn't been elaborated on, so it was kind of strange to realize that you didn't know as much as you thought about that place or that incident. It was very enlightening, very eye-opening, and as we said, there was a lot of crying and a lot of coming to grips as to what had happened to these different events over the years.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. Again, and that's the wrong word, but just heartbreaking that you weren't even taught what really happened. And when you said it's important to know African American history for black people, I mean African American history, or for everybody, you said, but African American history is our history. It's the history of this country and what we did, what white people did, you know.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah.
And when you got not that we can't jump around, so I will. When you got to the Legacy Museum, the one that, you know, specifically deals with slavery and how it's still pervasive in the form of mass incarceration, and I know I have already alluded to the fact that it's supposedly very upfront about the history, what was your impression of how they presented all of that black history and the white people's part in it?
Well, I think for the Equal Justice Initiative, the Legacy Museum, and National Memorial to Peace and Justice, that's a mouthful. But I think if you can make the trip and go there and see it, I do think that's a wonderful thing. It's sort of in three parts, like the titles tells you. The Equal Justice Initiative is the offices of Brian Stevenson and Mr. Stevenson met us when we arrived. I was thrilled at because I thought maybe he might not have been there that day, but he met us, and supposedly, according to our numbers of 110 people on a pilgrimage, we are the largest group that has returned soil to the Legacy Museum. So when you go in and you meet Mr. Stevenson, you're in the Equal Justice Initiative offices. Then when you go around the building, because they pretty much take up a four-square block in Montgomery, there's the Legacy Museum. And that's also very interesting. When we were in the Equal Justice Initiative conference room where we delivered the soil, on the entire back wall of that conference room are the vessels that hold the soil of where known African Americans were lynched, and on that wall is entirely Alabama. There is no one else on that wall except Alabama. Then when you go into the Legacy Museum, that's very interesting. That has a lot of hands-on and different things where you can touch, and when they break it down by a U.S. map, you can touch actually your state, and it will tell you as of today or when you're standing there how many lynchings that they do have recorded. The biggest thing when you're in there is you're looking at all the vessels of soil that's been returned of known lynching victims, and this is just what they know. These are not any records or records that we don't have or people that we don't know of. And then, of course, you go to the National Memorial to Peace and Justice, which is overlooks the city of Montgomery because it was built on it's built on a land rise, and so it overlooks the city, and that is very lovely. It's an outdoor museum, and this is where the module to John Henry James hangs from the ceiling, and he's not the only one. There's a lot there, and there is a module that will be sent to Charlottesville to mark him as a memorial, and it's up to the city of Charlottesville and the county of Albemarle and the citizens to decide how this module will be displayed and where it will be displayed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. That's another piece of this this circle right. of life or death.
I realize this is a pretty basic question, but I am still just genuinely interested that at the Memorial for Peace and Justice, you mentioned these, you know, these the pillars are hanging. That I know that is, you know, like resembling the idea of men and women and children hanging. So what was it like to walk into this place with about 800, I think, pillars hanging above you in that way?
Well, it's very interesting. One of the first things that I thought of when we left the Equal Justice Initiative offices, we went to the Memorial to Peace and Justice, and it's only about 2 miles from their offices, but it's on a landscape that overlooks the city. And so when you get out of the bus and you're there at the Memorial to Peace and Justice, when you look around you, you're above the city of Montgomery. And when we arrived, it looked like a storm was coming, so there was lightning off in the distance, and it was really interesting. You're overlooking Montgomery, and this Memorial to Peace and Justice is sort of an outside museum, and one of the first things that you come upon when you start taking the tour or walking through this, you come up on a sculpture of three or four slaves, and they are chained, and just the look on their face, they are just horrified. And it's a real powerful statue that's been put there. And the woman with one of the slaves, everyone in that sculpture is shackled and chained together. And I believe even she's holding an infant, and even the infant, they have chains there for the infant. And this is, you know, you're always going to be enslaved. You're always going to be shackled. And that hits you in the face first thing when you arrive there. And it's pretty powerful.
Yeah. Is it the place itself, is it sort of like you're outside inside? Is that what it is? Or is it very tomb-like?
It's outside inside because there are stretches where you go where you're sort of outside, and then it's kind of hard to explain. There aren't sidewalls on it. You have an overhead, and that's where the modules are hanging, and they start down low and they go up. And according to Mr. Stevenson, this is the image of being lynched because you are the lynched person is going higher and higher into these trees. So the modules there are starting down low, and they have all different states, and then it's broken down by the counties in those states, and these names are listed on these modules. And like I said, this is only the ones that they do know of.
Yeah, the guy, Brian Stevenson, it's so amazing that you got to meet him. I've heard so much about him. I think he's dedicated his life to helping the poor, the incarcerated. He's a social justice or public interest lawyer, and he's the executive director of that museum, and he founded it.
Yes, he did.
So that's really incredible. I think just reading about his work is like an education. And also that I just, to that point about incarceration, I think that the Legacy Museum is also subtitled or called From Enslavement to Mass Incarceration. So I know that that's one of the missions to show that, as I had said earlier, when segregation ended, mass incarceration began.
Yes. Like I said, if you've never, you know, traveled to Montgomery to see this, and it's sort of a three-pronged thing, I think you would greatly enjoy it. You do need to have quite a bit of time set aside to go see it. And in the Legacy Museum, one of the things I thought was very interesting is shortly after you enter the museum, there's a lot of hands-on things there. The interesting thing, like I said, was to touch your state and to see noted the numbers of people that were lynched. But also in the Legacy Museum, when you first enter in, you're in a dark room. And they're sort of like little cells or little mini rooms that you walk past. And when you walk past these rooms and you look in, you're sort of like looking in what would be almost like a jail window or whatever. And there are different stories and different people in these. And it's an audio and video. They are not live people. But one of the interesting ones was when you walk up on this little room, and of course you're in the dark the entire time, and you walk up and there was a young girl with her brother, two young kids who were in slavery, and they talk about being in slavery and wanting to run away and crying. And then you move down the line and you're looking at another little module room in the dark, and there's a woman that, you know, is talking about how dire her need is, and she's in slavery and, you know, would rather die and trying to escape. And that's in the very first part of the Legacy Museum. And then, of course, you go up to the Memorial to Peace and Justice, which is the inside sort of outside museum. And this is where the modules to the lynchings hang.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate your being here and being eyewitnesses to that pilgrimage and letting us know how you felt and what it meant to you. And hope to keep talking about this throughout time. Go on, Nance.
I promise, Colleen, you must mention that you've got a play that is going on right now. So please tell us what it is and the two dates still left. People can get tickets for it.
Okay. The play is called Old School, and there are two more performances. One is tonight at 8 o'clock, and the doors open at 7:30. And tomorrow, on Sunday, we have a 2 o'clock play, and the doors open at 1:30. It's at the Jefferson African American Heritage Center, which is in Charlottesville. Old School is a play dedicated to honoring the Charlottesville African American educators and teachers. And we would like for everyone to come out and see this. We have some known and maybe some unknown actors. And it's at the Jefferson School tonight at 8 o'clock. And we'd love it if you'd come out. It was written by local playwright Caruso Brown. And it is a Charlottesville production.
Fantastic. Well, thank you cool. for that. And thank you yes. both for being here. Stick around. I want to take your picture. And Nancy, I don't know if we have time.
Okay. I leave it to you to tell me if we do. If we don't, we don't.
Yeah. Well, we have a minute.
You're the boss of me.
I'm the boss of you on this show. That's about it. Well, let's see. Let's see. I'm going to say that our theme music is by Springtide out of Japan. We really thank them for that. And maybe we have 30 seconds, so I'm going to say we don't really have time.
Okay.
For the palate cleanser is what we're talking about.
I can't speak that quickly. Okay. Very good.
I can't either. So we'll do that. I have a great palate cleanser for next week, but I will say
we'll do a 60-minute palate cleanser.
And next week is Lee Graves here to talk about beer. Okay. Yes, the suds and the hops
That's
of Virginia.
That's a palate cleanser. See, I'm not lying.
The suds and the hops of Virginia, craft beer and all that, and the history of beer in Virginia. And we welcome back Jaywar of Vibe Riot. He's a great guy, and we're really looking forward to that. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, our guests. Remember, no one has to do everything, but everyone has to do something. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Apropos of Something this morning on 94.7 WPBC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Show and host Ellen Daniels and Nancy Lawrence each Saturday at 10 for Apropos of Something. Brought to you by the Beckham team and Keller Williams. Show archive can be found at SeavillePodcast.com.